continuing what we usually do on Shabbos morning. Unfortunately, at the present time, we can't do it on Shabbos morning, so we're lucky here in Australia that it's a short Shabbos and it's still not late, so Matzah Shabbos is still an option. And what we are in the middle of is we're really in the middle of the story of Shaul. So this is from Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chav Ches, chapter 28. That's where we finished chapter 27, so we're up to chapter 28. This is really coming now to the end of Shaul's life. Shaul, as we know, is the first king of the Jewish people, and we are almost at the end. Just as a small intro before we read the Psukim, this is one of the most fascinating chapters in Tanakh, very challenging to understand. If you read it as a story, it's very interesting. But as we know, Tanakh is not a story, it's a holy sefer, as well as a book which is lessons for us for life. And we've already learned that despite all the mistakes that Shaul seemed to have made, Shaul was an incredible tzaddik. He was an incredible righteous man, a holy man, a very unique and special individual who was chosen to be the first king. That makes this chapter even more difficult to understand. So how we're going to do this, and I hope this will work. One more quick thing. Anybody has any suggestions or questions or general questions, you can text me during, I'll tell you my number during the week to tell me if you want me to do something differently, if you think it's not clear or whatever it may be. In the meantime, today what we are going to do is I'm going to actually read the whole chapter first. You'll have to bear with me. Because with this chapter, I'd like to see first the story. Even though it's simple and you can read it for yourself, but I would just like to go through it quickly. Then we are going to do a few psukim in Chumash, which are necessary to shed light and understand the depth of this chapter. And then probably next week, we're going to come back and do the chapter in much more depth. So we'll start right away, as I said, chapter 28. Shmuel Aleph. And you have a link, and there are many other places you can find it on the net. Shmuel Aleph, chapter 28, Perek Chav Ches. So, we'll start from the reading of the story. As I say, this story, you'll have lots of questions. We're going to try and answer some of them, not tonight. Tonight, I think I'm going to leave you with more questions, but in Irtzeh Hashem, time to think about it through the week, and hopefully next week we'll get to a few of the, a little bit to shed some light on what's happening. Vayihi bayomim ahem, and it was in those days, vayikbitzu plishtim es machanehem litzova lihilochem biYisrael. And the plishtim, they were the enemies of the Jewish people who we know have fought so many wars and constantly antagonizing the Jewish people. They gathered their camps together for warfare. Lihilochem, to actually fight against the Jewish people. Vayomer Achish el David, and Achish, who was the leader of the Plishtim at the time, he says to King David, who wasn't the king yet, he says to David, Yadoya teida ki iti teitze b'machane ata v'anoshecha, that with me you will go out to war, you and your men. Just quickly to explain this pasuk, we mentioned, and I know it's been a while, in the last time that we were together, that David had to run away from Shaul because Shaul was trying to kill him. David had found refuge in by Achish, in the Plishtim. And he acted deceptively, and Achish was convinced that David was an ally, that David was an enemy of Shaul, therefore an enemy of all of those who support Shaul. And therefore, Achish felt that he can trust David, and he actually thought in his warped mind that David would join him in battle against the Jewish people. That's how much David was able to deceive Achish. This is not such a big part of the story, but I'll just quickly read through. And then he says, Vayomer David el Achish. Now David's in a very difficult predicament. And this is something, again, that we might discuss next week a little bit more in depth. But just to understand this incredibly challenging position that David HaMelech is in now. He has no choice. He's by the Plishtim, because if he's with Jewish people, Shaul will kill him. But, and he has to act as if he's their friend, obviously, that he's there for them, in order so that they give him safety. They provide safety for him. But now what are they doing? Now they're using David And they think that they can put David in this terrible position to have to fight against his own brothers and sisters, the ones whom he loves. Obviously, David, with all of his, so to speak, all of his discomfort that he had been put through by Shaul, still, even Shaul he loved, he would never harm Shaul, and definitely not any of the Jewish people. So what does he do now? How does he answer Achish? So he says to Achish, Lochein ata teidas asher ayas avadecha, therefore you shall now know what your servant will do. If that's not a political answer, then I don't know what is. You know, when you ask a politician a question, you never understand what he answers. They can make up, string a million words together that make no sense. Well, this is really what David did here. He strung a sentence that made no sense. Because obviously, he's not agreeing with Achish. He's not going to fight against his brothers. On the flip side, he can't say openly that. So he just gives this strange statement, therefore you shall know what your servant will do. And what Achish thinks is that, oh, David's saying, yeah, no problem, I'll be loyal to you. And therefore he says, Vayomer Achish al David, Achish says to David, Lachin Shomer L'Roishi Asimcha Kol Hayomim. I will put you as my bodyguard, as the one who will protect me all of my days. So it shows his extreme trust in David, even though that's not what David meant. Nevertheless, he says, I'll put you near me during the battle. You will be my bodyguard. Now, the next pasuk, seemingly unconnected, and we'll see where that comes in. Ushmuel Mace, and the great prophet of the time was Shmuel, he died. Vayispidu Lai, Kol Yisrael, the entire Jewish nation eulogized him. Vayikbiruhu Beramah, he was buried in Ramah. Ubeirai, and in his city. Vishol Heisir Ha'ayvais, Ve'es Hayid Einim, Mei Ha'aretz. And Shaul, who was still the king at the time, had removed what we call Oivais and Yedainim. That was all the different divinations, all the magicians, all the sorcerers. He had gotten rid of them from the land. Now, this pasuk is a very strange one. Where does it come in? We said Shmuel, we had already mentioned Shmuel's passing before. Shmuel had already passed away earlier, and it was already mentioned. Where does it come in here? Because this leads to the next part of the story. Just one small detail in this pasuk. I know, like I say, next week we'll go more in depth, but it's actually quite beautiful. It says that when Shmuel passed away, you know, he was only 52 years old. He was a very beloved prophet of the Jewish people. They say he was equal in holiness to Moshe and Aaron. And when he passed away, everybody was upset. Everybody was mourning. And you can see in this pasuk, it says they buried him in Ramah, Ubeirai. They buried him, and then it says Beroma Ubeirai, which really doesn't refer to burying, it refers to the eulogy. Where did they eulogize Shmuel? In Ramah and in his city. What does that mean, in his city? His city is Ramah. So the commentaries tell us, wherever a Jew found themselves, whichever part of the land of Israel, the eulogies and the mourning was as strong, as deep, as painful as in Ramah. That's how beloved Shmuel was to the entire Jewish nation. But the second part of the pasuk, where does that come in? And then tells us that what did Shaul do? He had removed all of the magicians. So what's happening? Just on a simple level, we can understand that Shmuel was the prophet. What's a prophet? On a simple level, a prophet is somebody we turn to when we want to know what's coming. The future, how to act, what to do. He can predict, he can give us God's message, shed light on what's coming. Now that Shmuel had passed away, what happened was that the people felt very anxious. They had incredible anxiety. They didn't know whom to turn to for guidance, for some kind of sense of what's coming. And therefore, they started to turn to these type of sorcerers, divinations, all these kinds of things, because there was a lack of the prophet. And Shaul, the king, saw this, and he realized that this is not a good thing. So he actively pursued and got rid of all of these sorcerers. Okay, that's the, so to speak, the flow of the psukim. But that makes the next part very challenging. What happens next? Vayikbetzu plishtim. So as we mentioned at the beginning, the plishtim were going to fight the Jewish people. The Jewish people are in danger. The plishtim are camped literally extremely close to where the Jewish people are. It says the fact that Shmuel had passed away made the Plishtim more arrogant and more secure in the sense that now they will definitely be able to overcome the Jewish people because now they don't have their holy prophet anymore. They're definitely more fragile. They're definitely more able to be conquered. That's why we find that the danger was even stronger and the fear of the Jewish people and of Shaul was very, very strong. Vayikbetzu Plishtim. So the Plishtim gathered, vayavayu vayachanu b'shunam, and they came and they camped in a place called Shunam. And vayikbet Shaul as kol Yisrael. So what did Shaul do? He had to gather the Jewish people. Vayachanu b'Gilboya, and they camped in Gilboya. What that means is that he gathered together the army, obviously, to defend the Jewish people. The Plishtim, the enemy, was extremely close, very fierce, very scary. Vayar Shaul es machane Plishtim. And you can see the pasuk describes to us, which is not the usual. This is not just the facts. This is you can get the feeling of the emotion of what was going on, of what the people felt, and not only the people, but Shaul, the fierce holy king, who had led them to battle so many times and was taller than most men. And what did he feel? Vayar Shaul es machane Plishtim. Shaul saw the camp of the Plishtim. Vayira, and he was afraid. Vayecherad libay ma'oid, and his heart trembled greatly. You see the incredible anxiety and fear that Shaul was filled with. And you could imagine if Shaul's filled with fear, how much the Jewish people are filled with fear. And now he doesn't know what to do. Under normal circumstances, what might he have done? He would have, if it had been just a few months earlier, he would have obviously sent for the prophet Shmuel and said, what should we do? Daven for us or guide us, give us instruction. There was no Shmuel, as we just said, he had passed away. The other thing was that the Plishtim were more arrogant than ever because they felt not only has Shmuel passed away, but you know who we have on our side? David. David's with us. And to them, they thought David was actually loyal to them. So they felt, and not only that, but they felt that Shaul is so consumed with getting rid of David that he doesn't have his mind in the right place. He's more vulnerable. We will be able to conquer the Jewish people. So it's actually quite a scary situation happening here. So what happens? Vayishal Shaul b'Hashem. So what does Shaul do? He can't go to Shmuel. So the pasuk says very, very sort of in a general way that he inquires of Hashem. V'loyanu, but Hashem doesn't answer him. Gam b'chalayma, it's not in a dream. Gam b'urim, and we mentioned the urim v'tumim. That's the special, you know, a special piece of document that was in the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, which used to answer the Jewish people when they had queries. So that was another form of asking Hashem. Gam b'nevi'im, even the prophets. And it says a very interesting thing that the prophets of the time, maybe it was temporary, but just at that time, seemed to be that the prophets lost all their prophecy. It was obviously meant to be that way, but there was a lack, a tremendous void of a feeling of where we can get our guidance from. And when it says in a dream, you know, there's a concept of asking in a dream. There is such a concept of a way, there's methods of how you can put a question and then you go to sleep. And if you're, you know, at the time when your neshama goes up, you get an answer. He tried everything, nothing worked. So he's really getting desperate. Vayomer Shaul avados, Shaul says to his servants, Bikshu li eishes balas oiv, search for me. Here comes the very difficult part of the chapter and fascinating. So what does he do? He seems lost. He has no choice. He says, search for me, seek for me a woman who is a balas oiv. That's one of those type of sorcery, as we say, necro, however you pronounce it. But whatever it is, I'll tell you what Oiv is. Oiv is one of the interesting ones where it says that they actually can raise somebody from the dead. And then the person speaks out of maybe one of their armpits or something. And it's this a very interesting system. But they have powers, magical powers, if you want to say, to get in touch with those who have passed away. It's interesting if it's true or not. We'll discuss that soon. But this is what he was seeking. Why? The elcha, I will go to her. The edrisha ba, and I will inquire of her. Vayayimru avad aveilav. So his servant said to him, hine eishes balas oiv be'eindar. Now Shaul had gotten rid of them, but there's still one. There's one lady who knows how to do this type of raising somebody from the dead, and she lives in a city called Eindar. It's interesting, it says that she was actually the mother of Avner, who was one of Shaul's most trusted men, the general in Shaul's army. She was a very special lady, and actually, we'll discuss more next week, but the commentaries tell us she really wasn't practicing anymore because Shaul had gotten rid of the practice. Some commentaries tell us that she knew it from before, or she actually only used it in order to help the Sanhedrin of the time, the judges and the leaders of the Jewish people, in advising them when they were doing research about these things, if they needed to find out something, perhaps to seek somebody out. She was the one that they asked. So she used her knowledge of these different occult matters in a positive way. She wasn't actually practicing it anymore in a negative way, but she was around and they directed Shaul to her. So what does Shaul do? Vayischapes Shaul. So what does Shaul do? He disguises himself. Vayilbash begodim acherim. He puts on other clothing. Vayelech hu ushnei anoshim. He goes, him and his two men. One of them was Avner, actually, Imai. Vayavoyu el ha'isha. And he comes to the woman, Laila, at night. Vayomer, and he says to her, Kasami nali ba'ayv. I want you to now divine for me with this method of ayv. V'ha'alili esasher oymar eilecha, and bring up for me the one whom I want. So he's commanding her to do that practice of this kind of divination, and he wants somebody to come up from the dead. Just want to share one beautiful thing that's very fascinating, because it says Laila, night. The commentaries tell us that magic doesn't work at night. Whether it works or not is a different discussion. But even if there is some power, they don't have power at night. Why does it say night? Did he come to her at night? So a lot of the commentaries say it wasn't literally night. But because of the danger that the Jewish people found themselves in, and because of the darkness which surrounded Shaul in his terrible difficulty that he was in, it felt like night. To him, it was a state of constant night. And in that state, he's going to actually seek a woman who's going to bring somebody up from the dead. Now, who does he want? Let's see. The Taimer Ha'isha. So when he approaches her, so what does she say to him? A love to him. Hine ata yadaita es asher asa Shaul. You know what Shaul. She doesn't know that this is Shaul because he has dressed up. But she says to him, you know what Shaul has done. Asher hichris es ha'ayvais ves ha'yidaini min ha'aretz. He has abolished all of these practices, all these magic sorcerers from the land. V'lama ata misnakesh b'nafshi lahamiseini. Why are you laying a snare? Why are you tricking me in order to cause me to die? That's what it sounds like. Because if I do this and Shaul finds out, I will be put to death. So he says, very interesting, v'yishav ala Shaul. So Shaul promises, b'Hashem, in the name of God, lemer saying, chai Hashem, if Hashem lives, like he makes this swear, im yikarech avayim b'davar hazeh, if any harm will befall you because of this, you will have no punishment. So he swears, very interesting, in the name of Hashem, while he is wanting her to do something exactly the opposite of what Hashem wants. The commentaries say it's like a woman who goes perhaps to have an affair and swears by the name of her husband in that house. It was such a crazy thing that Shaul did, but nevertheless, this is what he's done, and she's fine with it. This sort of calms her down. So she says, "Vatimer Haisha." So she says to him, "Es mi alala, who should I bring up for you?" Fayomer, and he says, "Es Shmuel ha'alili." Bring up Shmuel, okay? So now we're starting to understand. He's missing Shmuel. He needs guidance. And Shmuel has just passed away, not that long before. He says, bring me Shmuel. So there's a lot of commentaries. Did she know which Shmuel? Perhaps she just thought Shmuel. Shmuel's a name. There are many Shmuels. She didn't know which Shmuel, but she listens and she says, okay, I'll bring you Shmuel. Vatera ha'isha es Shmuel. And it says the woman saw Shmuel. So she brought him up. And like I say, we'll discuss what really happened. But in the meantime, just on a simple level, she brings up Shmuel v'tizak b'kol gadol, and she screams with a loud voice, v'taymer ha'isha el shol. And the woman says to Shol, lemer, saying, lo marimi soni v'ata shol. Why did you deceive me? You are the king himself. You are Shol. I know, like I said, I'm going to go, but just to tell you, because it's hard to understand, how does she know all of a sudden that this is Shol? She sees Shmuel. She doesn't know, how does that help her to guide her that this is Shol? So the commentaries tell us that in the practice of bringing up the dead, usually the dead would come feet first. I guess it was the whole thing was such a crazy thing, and they would come feet first and head last. Here, when she brought Shmuel up, what does she see? She sees a man who's coming head first. Not only that, but when she sees Shmuel, she sees that he is bowing to Shol. He bows to Shol. And she realizes she can actually see that this is the prophet Shmuel. Whom? To whom would Shmuel accord honor? Only to the king. That's the only one that's above him. So she realizes right away that the one who has asked her is Shol himself. And she's absolutely petrified. Okay, what happens? So she says, "Vayomer lo hamelech al tiri." So the king says to her, "Don't be afraid." Rather, he inquires, "Ki ma ra'is? Tell me, what do you see?" So we understand already that she brings up Shmuel, and Shaul doesn't see him because he asks her, "What do you see?" Vatoimer ha'isha. So the woman says, "El Shaul, Elokim ra'isi." Oilim min haaretz. I see gods or angels, masters, coming up from the earth. So she sees and he doesn't. It's plural, very interesting. Elokim ra'isi oilim, coming up. Who is coming up? If she only brought Shmuel, why is it in the plural? And I'll just tell you quickly, this one, like I say, next week we'll develop more, but something fascinating, it wasn't Shmuel on his own. He had somebody who accompanied him, Moshe Rabbeinu. It's amazing. Moshe came with Shmuel there in this place somehow. This woman, well, we'll see if she brought them up, but they came. Shaul doesn't see them. Why is Moshe there? Because it says that Shmuel had passed away not that long before. And when he got this, he didn't associate anything with the woman. But nevertheless, he gets this, I don't know how you describe it even, but some kind of a message. We don't understand what that means. But some kind of a message that he's being summoned. And he thinks he's being called to the court of Hashem. And what does he do? He wants somebody who can support him. And who does he think of? He begs Moshe Rabbeinu, come and be on my side to tell Hashem that everything that I did when I led the Jewish people was according to your law. So he's bringing Moshe as a support because the Gemara describes that Shmuel was petrified when he felt the summons. He didn't know. He thought he was being called to Hashem's court. There they are. She sees Shmuel and Moshe, but she doesn't hear anything. Let's see what happens next. Vayomer lo. Okay, and then he says to her, Ma ta'arai. Shaul wants a description. What do they look like? Because he can't see them. Vataymer, so she says, Ish zokein oila, an old man has got up. V'hu oitem me'il, and he's wearing a cloak. Vayeda Shaul, so Shaul knows ki Shmuel hu, that it's Shmuel. Vayikad atayim arza, v'yishtachavu, so he bows. He bows down with his face to the ground and he prostrates himself. How does he know it's Shmuel? Very interesting. She says she sees an old man, first of all. We said Shmuel passed away. He was only 52. He wasn't an old man and he didn't look like an old man. That's why the commentaries tell us, according to most opinions, that there wasn't just one person, there was two. The old man was Moshe Rabbeinu, and the one in the cloak is Shmuel. What does Shmuel have to do with the cloak? So if we go back to the beginning of the Navi, we are told at the beginning of the story, when Shmuel was just a little child and his mother Hannah brought him to the Mishkan, it says she sewed him a special cloak. She was giving her child at the age of 2-3 years old, a young child, to be taught in the holy Mishkan. And she knitted, or she, who knows what she did, she sewed this special cloak for him. And this cloak was beloved and kept by Shmuel. And it was a certain association that when Shaul saw it, he knew this is Shmuel. So now he knows that it's them, and as we can see, he bows to the ground. And now Shaul hears Shmuel. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul. So he doesn't see him, but he hears him. And the woman hears nothing. The two men who had accompanied Shaul didn't hear or see anything. Nothing. They didn't know what was going on at all. But she sees and he hears. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul. So Shmuel says to Shaul, Lama hirgastani lahalais oisi. He's not very impressed. He says, why have you roused me to bring me up? Vayayimer Sholan, actually he's describing, why have you roused me? Why have you made me so afraid? I thought I was going before Hashem to be judged. I was trembling. What have you done? Besides the fact, why are you disturbing my peace? As we always say, when somebody passes away, we call it they're in peace. I was in peace. I was there in Gan Eden with Moshe Rabbeinu. What are you bringing me back down here? Why are you disturbing me? L'halos, I see, to bring me up. V'yemer Shaul, so what does Shaul say? Tsar li ma'od. I am greatly distressed. I'm in tremendous pain. U'plishtim nilchamim bi. And the plishtim are fighting against us. Ve'elaykim sar me'olai, and God has turned away from me and from all of us. Ve'loyanani oid, and he doesn't answer me anymore. Gam biyad hanavim, not through the prophets. Gam b'chaloymais, not through dreams. Ve'ekra l'chol haydi'eni ma'esa. So therefore I've called you to tell me, what should I do? He doesn't mention the Urim V'Tumim. Just keep that in mind. Very interesting. Beforehand, it does mention it. Over here, he doesn't tell Shmuel that he tried the Urim V'Tumim and that he didn't get an answer through that. It's a very important thing. Vayomer Shmuel, and Shmuel says, V'lama tishaleini. So why do you ask me? V'Hashem sar me'alecha. And Hashem has left you. Vayehi orech, a very interesting language, and he has become, so to speak, your adversary, which actually means he's become your enemy. He's on the side of the one who is your enemy, on David's side. He is not with you anymore. Why do you think I can help you? Vayas Hashem loy, and Shmuel continues, and he says to him, and Hashem is going to do for him, who is him? For David. Kasher diber, just like he promised, biyadi, through me. Vayikra Hashem es hamamlocha miyadech, Hashem will tear away the kingdom from you. Vayitna l're'acha l'david, and he will give it to your colleague, to your friend, to David. Interesting. Shmuel had already told that to Shaul. Shaul already knew that. In the previous time when Shmuel actually told it to him while Shmuel was alive, and he said it face to face to Shaul, he said to him, I will give it, vayitna l're'acha hatoiv mimecha, to the one, the colleague, the friend who is better than you. Here he doesn't say that. Here he says he's going to give it l're'acha l'david. So there's two explanations why he changed it. The one explanation is over there Shmuel was alive and he was afraid of David, of Shaul. Shaul could hurt him. And if he used the word David, who was Shaul's enemy, who knows what Shaul could do. And therefore he only alluded to David by saying, L're'acha toiv mimecha, the one who is better than you. And here he's already in the higher worlds. He's not afraid of Shaul anymore. Or there's another way of looking at it, which is so beautiful. I saw a very beautiful explanation that when we are in this world, even a tzaddik like Shmuel still has a limited vision. And he can see the person, but it's still limited. When we go up to the higher worlds, our vision, our insight becomes so much clearer. Here in this world, when Shmuel looked at Shaul, he saw Shaul for what he was, a flawed human being who had made many mistakes and hadn't followed Hashem's instructions the way he was told. So to him, to Shmuel, David was better than Shaul. But once Shmuel went up to the higher realm and saw things literally as clear could be, and he understood all the nuances, all the subtleties, all the depth, he wasn't so judgmental anymore. And that's why he doesn't say better than you. He says L'Reyacha L'David, almost making David equal to Shaul, which is quite a fascinating thing, because in this specific conversation, he is going to give Shaul a terrible, terrible, terrible report. Let's see what he says to Shaul. He says in the next pasuk, "Kasher lo yishamata b'kol Hashem," because you didn't listen to the voice of Hashem, v'lo yasisa charen apay ba'amalek, and you didn't execute all the anger in Amalek. In other words, you didn't destroy Amalek as you were commanded. Al kein hadavar hazeh asei lecha Hashem hayoyim hazeh. That's why Hashem has done this thing to you today. And what is it? Vayitein Hashem gam es Yisrael imcha. Hashem will give you and the Jewish people with you biyad plishtim, into the hands of the Plishtim, umachar ata ubanecha, and tomorrow you and your sons, imi, will be with me. In other words, you're going to die, and you're going to come up and be with me. Gam es machane Yisrael yiten Hashem biyad Plishtim, even the camp of the Jewish people will fall into the hands of the Plishtim. So the prophecy that Shmuel is giving is not a very positive one. Not only will the Jewish people not win the war, the Plishtim will definitely be successful, but Shmuel himself and his two sons will be, I don't know if it's two, but it's definitely more than one, Yonis, and I think it's two, and the other son will be killed in the war. And a very beautiful, just one thing that again we'll discuss next week, but it's fascinating. He says, how does he say that you will die? He says, you will be with me. Well, I'm passed away already. But it's actually a very comforting and beautiful language that Shmuel is using. Because the Gemara says, when Shmuel says that you will be with me, he says, imi b'michitzasi, with me in my mechitza, which means in my room, in my space. What does that mean? That means that Shaul, despite all of his flaws, is going to a place in Gan Eden, and who's going to be next to him? Shmuel, obviously a very high place in Gan Eden. So that's actually a very, very, in a sense, a comforting part of the prophecy. Okay, and that also makes the story very difficult to understand, even more difficult, but that's what we'll have to discuss. Let's go on. He says like this, Vayimaher Shaul. So what happens when he hears this terrible news? So Shaul hastens, Vayipol Mloy Kaimosai Arts, and he falls, his whole length of himself falls down to the ground. Vayira ma'oid, and he was very afraid, midivrei Shmuel, from the words of Shmuel, gam koyach loy hayabai, he had no strength, ki loy achal lechem kol hayayim v'chol halayla, because he was fasting, he hadn't been eating for the whole day and the whole night. Some of the commentaries explain that we know this from earlier, that Shaul, despite all of his mistakes, and he looks like an interesting man, he was an incredible tzaddik, and one thing that he used to do was before they would go to war, he would fast, even though that seems quite a difficult thing. You need all your strength. But he would fast and do tshuva. So Shaul was fasting at the time, and therefore he literally had no strength. So what happens? We'll just quickly continue to read just a few psukim. And therefore, Vatavai Ha'isha, so the woman comes to Shaul. Remember, she hadn't heard what Shmuel says, but she sees now that Shaul has fallen and Shmuel is gone. Vateira, and she sees ki nivhal ma'id, that he's very, very afraid. He's literally terror-stricken. Vataymer elav, so she says to him, hine shama shivchascha b'kailecha, I have listened to your voice. In other words, I did what you asked me to do. Va'osim nafshi b'chapi, and that was something which was dangerous. I put my life in my hands. Ve'eshmas tvarecha asher dibarta elai, and obeyed your words, which you spoke to me. So now, va'ata, and now, shmana gam ata b'kol shivchascha, and I ask you a favor back. Listen to what I am asking you to do. And what does she want him to do? Vasima lefanecha paslechem, I want you to eat. She wants him to eat. Ve'echol, and eat. I'm going to give you bread. Vayhi b'cha koyach, so you will have strength. Ki seilech baderech, and because you are going to be going on your way. First, Shaul refuses. Vayimain, and he refused. Vayimer lo yoichel, I will not eat. Vayifritzu b'yavadav, but not only did the woman press him, but his servants pressed him. V'gam ha'isha, vayishma l'kailam, finally he listened to their voice. Vayokom me'aretz, he gets up from the ground. Vayeshev el hamita, and he sits down on the bed. Vayeshev egel marbek, so she doesn't just give him bread, it describes that she had a fatted cow in the house. Vatemaher vatesbacheyu, and she actually shechts him. It says that a woman is, here we learn that a woman perhaps is allowed to shecht. She shechts the cow, she prepares it very quickly. Vatikach kemech, and she takes flour. Vatolosh, and she kneads it. Vatefeyu, and she bakes it. And she makes it into the matzos, into these quickly baked cakes. Vatigash lufnei shol, and she brings it before shol, lufnei avadim, and before her servants. Vayechelu, and they ate. Vayakumu, and they get up. Vayelchu balayla hahu, and they went away on that night. Now this was definitely night for them, because now shol knows that his hours are numbered. Tomorrow, it's over. Okay, that's the story in a very small nutshell, which is a very difficult story to understand. We have many, many, many questions on this Navi. I guess the biggest, on this part of the Navi, I guess the biggest question is, how could Shaul think of doing what he did? He himself had eradicated that practice. It was forbidden, something that you're not allowed to do, not allowed to engage in, to bring up Shmuel from the dead. I mean, how could he disturb Shmuel? What was he thinking? How is it true? Did the lady have power? Do these practices really mean something? Can they actually do this? There are many, many questions. And also, interestingly enough, you can see that the one sin that's highlighted by Shmuel is the sin of not destroying Amalek. And that's why he says he's going to die tomorrow. And yet at the same time, he tells him, Shmuel says to Shaul, you're going to be with me. That's also an interesting thing. What does that mean? Is Shaul such a tzaddik, especially after engaging in this last practice that he did? What's happening? It's such a difficult story to understand. And all the details of the story are so detailed. It comes head first. She can see him. Shaul can hear him. The other ones don't see or hear anything. What's happening in the story? So I'm sorry that I'm not going to answer right now. I'd like to go to one other thing to give us a little bit of a clarity to understand what's happening. And time goes very quickly. So now, if you have a chumish, you can open up. We'll just read some of the psukim, and I feel that we're going to have to continue next week in depth. The psukim that I would like to do are from Parshas Shoftim, which is in Chumash Devarim, and it is Perek Yutches, chapter 18, Pasuk Tes, verse 9. I think you have a link to it, and I'll try to read it clearly. In Parshas Shoftim, here Moshe Rabbeinu is very, very clearly, I'm setting out certain rules. And amongst the rules are the forbiddenness of these type of practices. So let's see. And Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people that when you enter the land of Israel, ki ata bo el ha'aretz asher Hashem elokecha noseh lach, when you will come to the land that Hashem will give you, loy silma, do not learn la'asais, and look at the language he uses. What should you not learn and accustom yourself to do? Kitay avais hagoyim haheim, like the abominations, that's a very strong word, of the people who were living in the land. And what kind of practices are they? Lo yimatze b'cha maiver b'noyu b'tei ba'esh. So I shouldn't find amongst you people who put their children in the fire. This was a terrible practice called the melech, where they would have these fire columns and they would take their children and walk them through, and they would get burned for the idol worship. And he gives all different ones. Kaisim, Ksamim. So these are, this is a very interesting one. A diviner, it says, somebody who holds his staff, and he says, should I go or should I not go? Okay, so he asks the staff what to do. Very interesting practices. Ma'ainain. What's the ma'ainain? Ma'ainain is the one who have different opinions. Rabbi Akiva says to the one who says something will happen at a certain season. He gives a certain time and he says, that's a good time to do this and this. Or some people say that it is the ones who are illusionists. So they, all different kinds of practices. And don't practice umenachesh, one who reads omens. And this one is, like the Rashi gives an example, he says, if his bread fell from his mouth, or a deer blocked him on the road, or his staff fell from his hand, then, you know, people say, if that happens, then such and such will happen to you. All of these practices are forbidden. Umechashef, that's like real witchcraft, right? All these kinds of things. This is all forbidden. And he continues, v'chayver chaver, that's also a different type. This is an animal charmer that he gathers snakes or scorpions to use for divination. And then we come to v'shoyel oiv. and you are not permitted to inquire of Oiv. And Rashi tells us exactly what is Oiv. He says, this is Zu Mechashvus. This is a type of a witchcraft. Sheshmai Pisayim actually has a name. His name is Pisayim. Umedaber Mishechya. It speaks out of the armpit. Umayla Es Hames and raises the dead in his armpit. It's interesting kinds of practices. V'yidayini, a different type, that what the practitioner used to do is put a bone of an animal whose name is Yidaya, and what would happen is the bone would speak by means of witchcraft. And what else shouldn't you do? V'dayresh el hamesim, and you shouldn't consult the dead. All different ways of terrible, different practices. And Hashem is warning us that all of these things are forbidden. And he says again, ki say eves Hashem, these are an abomination, and anybody who does this, kol oisa eila, anybody who practices this, are an abomination. Not only that, but he gives us a direct, like a specific punishment. Those people who practice this type of practices, he says, Hashem Elokecha mayrish oisa mipanecha. He will banish, as he says, the nations from before you, which means that's why he got rid of them, and now he puts you, and if you practice that, you will be gotten rid of. And then comes a very important pasuk. The pasuk says, how should we behave? Tamim tiye im Hashem Elokecha. You shall walk, and literally they translate it as wholeheartedly with Hashem your God. Simply put, and I'm sorry that we won't have time today, and I really feel bad we did very little, but time does move quickly. But simply put, this seems to be the exact opposite way of behaving from what he has just described before. Before, people were so anxious and so curious and so needing to know what's coming next that they will engage in any kind of practice, whether it be bringing up the dead or any kind of divination or sorcery, in order to find out. And here Hashem says, no, walk wholeheartedly with Hashem your God. You accept what Hashem does. I want to just read you quickly what Rashi says. What is Tamim Tiyah? So Rashi tells us, Tamim Tiyah Hashem Alikecha, Hishaleich Imai Bitmimus. Walk with him with wholeheartedness, with simplicity, with trust, and with a sense that he is all that exists, and you accept what he decides for you. He says, V'loy sachkar achar ha'asidais, Rashi tells us, do not delve into the future. Ela kol mashe yavo alecha, whatever comes upon you, kabel betmimus, accept with wholeheartedness. V'as tiye imai, and then you will be with him, u'lechelkai, and of his portion. Now, next week we'll explain that a little bit more, but I just want to show you, to leave you even with a stronger question. We're going to leave a lot of questions, because if you look at the continuation of the psukim, the question becomes even stronger. Because then after it sounds like, so far what it sounds like is seeking the future, having that real desperate need to know what's coming next, seems to be forbidden, as we can see, seems to be a practice that we're not meant to engage in, and rather we should be wholehearted with Hashem. That would be fine if it left it there. But if you look at the next pasuk, ki hagoyim ha'ila sharat yerish oisam el ma'ininim vel kaismim yishmo, that all those nations that you are possessing, they listen to all these astrologers and all these diviners and all these things. Va'ata loichein nosan l'cha Hashem alikecha. But God didn't give you that method, that portion. Rather, what does Hashem give you? What does the pasuk say? Navi mikirbecha. I will give you a prophet from your midst. May achecha, from your brothers. Kamaini, like me. It's Moshe speaking. Moshe says, after I pass away, don't worry. Hashem is not going to leave you alone. In every generation, he's going to make sure that there's a prophet. Yakim l'cha Hashem alikecha, a love tishma'un. To him you shall listen. On a simple level, it sounds like a prophet is the method by which you are permitted to find out the future. Don't use all the diviners. Don't use all the magic. Don't use the sorcerers. That's not permissible. But what is permissible? Not only what is permissible, but what is something which you can hold on to and give you that encouragement and that gives you that, if you want to say, that ability not to be worried? It's a prophet. Are we permitted to seek the future? Are we encouraged to seek the future? Or are we meant to put our trust into Hashem and not seek the future? And if that's the case, what's the role of the prophet? And why is Moshe mentioning a prophet right here? It's very strange, very, very strange. And that's why the truth is, and I'm just going to leave you, I'm sorry, there's a lot of questions, and we will please God answer that. And any question, you can write me some interesting things through the week. I'll just tell you my number, any questions at all or any interesting insights, but we will see next week. I just want to leave you with one interesting thing, because some of the commentaries do say that this is something that Hashem has given us. He has given us prophets. Now, nowadays, we don't have a prophet, but we have the Holy Svarim. And it says the prophecy of Moshe and all of the prophecies of all of the prophets we have, that we have recorded, they are there to give us encouragement and to give us something to hold on to. And that is permissible. Definitely, according to many opinions, that is the way we look. And if we are feeling anxious, if we are feeling nervous, if we feel lost and alone, we shouldn't feel lost and alone, because Hashem has given us and has left us with these prophecies, the prophets and the prophecies of the prophets that have been recorded. They are holy, they are there for us, and we are permitted and allowed and encouraged to learn and find tremendous comfort and tremendous calmness through them. But next week we'll discuss it much more in depth. So just quickly, I should unmute, right? Okay, I'll unmute and I'll just tell you my number just in case you'd like to write any text. It's 0425-234-367. Okay, anybody have a specific question for today? I know there's lots of questions, but we'll see next week. Otherwise you can... Hi, Lisa. Good to see you. You're very welcome. As I saw you a whole week away, but Emirat Hashem. Okay. All right. Good to see you. Shavua tov and chodesh tov. What? What you said? No, and good to see you. Yes, a good morning. Okay, so I think we're going to end the meeting now. And like I said, any questions you can write. But in Mirtz Hashem, hopefully next week we'll answer some of the questions or get a bit more insight. Okay. Okay. Bye.